Welcome to the Alberta Wildlife Stories Podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to our supporters Grizz Targets, Slayer Calls, C&D Archery, and Precision Edge Taxidermy. To find more info on these great people, be sure to check out the links in the description, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening.
My name is Matt Vincent. I'm New Zealand-based and passionate about mountain and backcountry hunting. This has led to me founding MTN Gear, where we design and manufacture high-quality, lightweight, and highly functional products such as bipods, ice axes, and more. To find out more information, visit us at www.mtngear.nz or .us. We can also be found on the usual social media channels under the same name.
Join us on June 29th to July 1st for the first annual Alberta Wildlife Stories 3D shoot hosted at the Sherwood Park Archery Club in Central Alberta. The 3-day shoot will consist of 4 rounds, door prizes, vendors, a charity shoot-off, and much more, with all proceeds going to support the Sherwood Park Archery Club. To register, visit sherwoodparkarchery.com, and we hope to see you there. In case you missed it, we just announced the AlbertaWildlifeStories.com website, along with the first issue of the Alberta Wildlife Stories e-magazine and audio magazine that features articles narrated by the authors themselves. We're so stoked to bring this project to you guys. Head over to the website, check it all out. There's more content there with blogs, news posts, and everything there. We can't wait to bring you the next issue already. Joining us today is Hutley Shepherd. Hutley is well known for his work creating the AHA Shed Hunters Foundation that raises funds every year for people going through rough times. He is also known for his work on the Just Relentless YouTube channel and show, and this year took a giant wild boar. Recently, the man has had many great successes in his outdoor endeavors, including a great bull elk in 2023. We're stoked to get to know Hutley more and hear some of his favorite stories and what shaped his love for hunting and angling. Without further ado, Hutley, thanks for coming on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm not too bad. Thank you. First things first, guys, I want to say thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure up to this point and my first, so bear with me, and between all of us, we'll get through.
It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a good time.
Oh, sounds good, man. And yeah, I know it's been a little bit of a wait recently with kind of how far out we were booking pods and stuff like that. So it's one that both Luke and myself were really looking forward to chatting with you. And yeah, man, couldn't be happier to have you on. Thanks for carving out the time to do this.
Oh, not a problem.
So I know we were just kind of talking about the weekend. Like, it was a pretty busy weekend all around. Spring's kind of hitting. Everyone's getting back into the bush and enjoying the outdoors, getting stoked for summer and stuff. I know Luke and I were just out doing the whole bear baiting thing. And you and I, Huntley, messaged a little bit. And you're out doing some shed hunting. Where were you going out, or like, how long were you going, or how far? You, I thought you said you were going pretty far.
Yeah, so roughly in a day stretch, depends on what kind of time a guy has, but I've been pretty fortunate. My wife lets me come and go as I please, and I take the oldest boy with us, and we get anywhere between 8 to 25 kilometers a day. But when you're looking at a little guy with little legs that ain't much longer than 2 feet, 15 kilometers is quite a hike for a kid 8 years old.
No doubt.
100%. Did you have any success last weekend?
Yeah, last weekend we did, on both days, we did a total of 12, 13 sheds. This year has been kind of a hit and miss. The mild winters got our deer all over the countryside, and they're definitely a lot harder to find. And what we are finding are a lot of old white stuff, which is good. It kind of keens our eye a bit. Most of these areas is what we already shed hunted in previous years. So it goes to show you that even if you do this over and over and over, you still don't find 100% of them.
Yeah. Walk right past them sometimes, eh?
Truth be told, just this weekend, he took my 8-year-old yesterday, and he turned up 7, and I came out empty-handed, and we pretty much walked the same trail. So it just goes to show you a different set of eyes. A guy can't cover everything 100% all the time.
Yeah, I'm definitely pretty poor at it, and it was funny because even when we were out baiting, and I think I mentioned that to you, Huntley, but we came across like, what did you figure, Luke, a couple years old for sure since it dropped?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty chalky.
Yeah, and for the amount of people kind of going around there, and not that it's a heck of a lot of traffic, but probably quite a few people that have walked past it, whether it was using that bait site or what have you in previous years, but yeah.
Yeah, it's always a bonus. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I said, yeah, it's always a bonus. We have stumbled upon some pretty nice sheds setting out baits as well, and no matter what you're doing, anytime you're walking through bush, I like to say I'm shed hunting because I'm always watching.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's, it's something that Luke and I talk about a lot because Luke's avid about it. And I have embarrassingly enough to still admit over and over again, like I have, but I have literally never with my own eyes found one myself. And it's definitely for a lack of trying. Like you said, Huntley, I'll get out and do it when, anytime I'm out, like I'm always keeping an eye open, but I definitely don't go boots on the ground for, the 8 kilometers that you guys are getting around just strictly doing that. And I should, and I have my excuses, but yeah, but I know one day I'll turn one up and it'll just be like mind blowing. Cause I can't even find like the strawberries in the fridge or something like that. So I have a real tough time.
If you signed up for the AHA, you'd have an excuse to go.
Oh man, yeah. I should be doing that. And that's literally what we wanted to start talking about, like, right off the bat with you. You did mention, so you're with your oldest, your family, you said you had 3 kids?
Yes, I have 3 boys.
Nice. And so with the AHA, just tell us about the foundation first and foremost.
Oh, well, first and foremost, it all started with a bunch of like-minded people. I believe the first year we only had like 20 or 30 of us, and we all kind of just threw a little bit of money in the pot just for shits and gigs, more or less.
Yeah,
and had a little bit of fun, and we donated, I believe it was $400 or $500 to an organization out of Edmonton, a kids group, and we just had a couple little prizes that were donated, and we mostly did it just between friends. And there was quite a bit of interest. And then the first year, Carson Dales was the one that put it off. And then he kind of voluntold me to do the next year. And ever since I started, it's pretty much been my passion. It's pretty much what I put all my time in right now. It's this foundation, and between family, foundation, and work, that's pretty much what consumes my life.
That's so cool, man. And so where can people kind of see where they can register to, get out and go and do this and be a part of everything?
So we, I'm on Facebook and Instagram. We do more of our work through Facebook, but we do share a lot of photos, tag photos, everything all through Instagram. But the main concentration of it is definitely on the platform on Facebook. You get to see all the auctions. You don't get to miss a whole lot through there. So, yeah, you can just look up AHA Shed Hunters Foundation on either platform, and it'll be the first thing that pops up.
So is most of it like the biggest whitetail, biggest mule deer, biggest mule deer, biggest elk, or is it just the quantity of sheds? Like what's the goal with the competitions out of it?
Well, the first couple of years we did numbers, and after – the first year or two, I tried to make it a little more spread out and up chances of everybody finding sheds, because not everybody has the time, like we were just talking about, to spend day in, day out hitting trails. And there are a lot of people out there, myself included, from pretty much, let's say February, March, I start, and I go right till May. And that's what I do every day. Every day I'm off work, every weekend, until bears pretty much take over.
Nice. And so when people go to like to join in, like how can people, you know, find sheds and share them, you know, like you, they number them off and everything like that. Yeah. Like how does it work that way? I'm trying to remember how, like when you are submitting sheds to everything. Oh, like when
you're yeah. So I guess, every year we kind of tweak it a little bit, and I found this, this idea to be working really well. And it's a, once you register, or I shouldn't even say register, cause all hands are welcome. You don't necessarily have to donate to partake in the contest or foundation. Everybody's welcome. But once you do make a donation, we do a minimum donation of $20. So as I receive those donations coming in, I hand out numbers, you know, 1 through 40, 50, all the way up till we close our registration. And if we end up with 170 people, then that's where the number stops. And the only reason why this number come into place is that then I can take that and tell them with all their photos they upload, if they want to go towards categories, like Luke was saying, the biggest whitetail, the biggest mule deer, biggest match sets, I want to see that picture. With that number included. And that only tells me that that picture was taken this year. So somebody can't go back through their photos on their phone. If you're like myself, I have 20,000 pictures, and somebody can easily upload something from, you know, 3 years ago and say, hey, I just found this today.
Yeah.
We're trying to make it so it's a little fair. At the end of the day, it is a foundation. And my main concern is to give back to these families that need it most. Yeah, it's great to win a prize, and I mean our prizes ain't going to keep you home from work. They're swag packages, you know, like Big Game Illustrated steps up, Berta Buck steps up, a lot of personal companies all throw in little things, and it all goes a long ways. So at the end of the day, my main concern is to raise money for families. So it just keeps it honest, and it seems to be working really well these last couple of years, because we went 6 years consecutive with over 100 people registered.
That's wow. Awesome.
Man, that's unreal. And so do you want to share about the family that you're helping out this year and kind of the mission this year through everything that AHA is doing?
Yeah. So this year we've, so we pretty much cover all Western Canada. It's slowly, I guess, spreading through Canada itself. We have had support all the way down in Australia. Mm-hmm. So some of the families first started out, there were some families local around Lloyd, Wainwright area. We did a family at a V-Dam, like in Saskatchewan. Last year was at Airdrie. This year we're up in Grand Prairie. And these families are completely strangers to me. I don't know them. I put out a post, and people, I guess, would nominate or send in recipients. So this year we have a family out of Grand Prairie with a little girl that just actually turned 3 on March the 25th, Kylie. Kylie's been going through the ringer and back ever since she was born. And she has such a rare illness that they don't even have a name for it. It's a fourth case in world history, not Canada, world. So she's been struggling quite a bit. So we pulled together like we do, and we all come together as one. And our main concern is to help that family, because going through these tough times, your main concentration as a family is main focus is that child. So if we can lift the burden of transportation, hospital expense, hotel expenses, whatever the case may be, that relieves stress off the parents, for one. They can step away from work for a week while they go through that major surgery and both be at bedside.
Yeah, that's some touching stuff right there, man.
That's, yeah, it leaves me at a loss of words to, yeah.
Yeah.
To, like, it's
just on you, man. Like, that's huge. That's very inspirational and just crazy cool to hear.
Thank you. My three boys, well, I guess I should say my two boys, is what really fuels my passion and my drive behind all of it, because between my wife and I, we went through the unthinkable with our first two boys. In 5 years, we undergone nine open heart surgeries, between our two boys. So I've been on both sides of this story. 8 years ago, I was that family.
Yeah.
And when you go through times like that and you step away from work, $20 goes a long ways.
Absolutely.
So that's the main thing. And that what fuels, like I said, the drive, the passion. I personally know what it's like, and I take it very personal.
Man, that's, it leaves me at a loss of words 100%. But, one of the things we had written down here is like, what drove you to start doing this? Right. And, when you speak from the experiences that, you and your wife, and I mean your kids as well, like everyone have gone through, like that's, I know they say like until you have kids, right, it's hard for things like that to truly resonate. And, both Luke and myself just have one child at the moment, right? And, you would do anything for those kids, right? Like, and, to hear someone that, like yourself, that has gone through that and then taken those hardships and persevered through it with your kids and make the best out of life and then turn around and give back is like, man, that's something that the world is constantly, unfortunately, lacking, right? Like, is just people like yourself going out of their way for other people that are just in need, right? And it's such a huge service to the community and such a, humane thing. It's just incredible, man.
That's very inspirational.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a very good support behind me. I mean, I spearhead it. Yeah, take credit. I take credit there. But at the end of the day, without the 2,500 members I have, that's very like-minded like myself, we couldn't do this year after year after year, and our totals and our outcome at the end of it are getting quite sufficient and fairly high. Like when we first started, like I said, $500, we're almost hitting $15,000 in a season.
Dang.
And it's a nonprofit. So 100% of money coming in is going back out. And then with what me and my wife went through, like I say, I always take it personal. So I set a goal and I reach that goal no matter what it takes. I want to reach that goal. And if that's me donating the last $600 or the last $800 or running two more auctions or just something so we can hit that, that's what we do.
Yeah.
So if people want to get involved, find you on Facebook, AHA, or just message yourself to donate to this.
So I guess the easiest way would be to find AHA Shed Hunters Foundation on Facebook, and then they can find me through there, or like you said, they can reach out and message me through Messenger as well if they were looking to donate auction items, whatever they want or can do to help. That would be the best way to get in touch with me for sure.
Well, but here's the call to action to all the listeners.
Yeah. Speaking of which, that will definitely, I think outside the chat, we'll have, a whole nother conversation just with regards to stuff that I think Alberta Wildlife Stories would like to do to contribute. Yeah, and just even, I think myself personally and probably Luke personally too. Man, it's tough because it's like,
how do you move on from that?
Well, yeah, like how do you, like, I could talk to you for hours about just this one topic.
Incredible
work. Yeah, it hits home for sure because my sister, she just had her first child, and being in Newfoundland, I'm from Clarenville, she had to go to Toronto Sick Kids to deliver, and I don't know how much detail she'd be comfortable with me putting it on the air, but I did a visit in November to the Sick Kids Hospital. Man, that is a heart-wrenching place. I know you just I'm not overly religious or anything, but boy, I was praying to God that no more kids get sick.
Well, yeah, it's unreal. Like, we spent all of our time, and I'm talking like 300 plus days in intensive care.
Yeah.
And no matter what your story is, like at the time, our kid, our oldest, was only born with half a heart, and we're new parents, young. Like that was the end of the world for me. It was.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
End of the world for my wife. I mean, she was 19 years old. So, with everything that went on, they told us that we would only have a maximum of 14 days. So we prepared ourselves for it. And here on May the 4th, he turns 9. So it's been a very emotional, short little life for him. And he beat all odds. So we rally together and we wish that everyone we support and families we help follow through and do the same. But not to stray off too much, but when you're in the hospital, no matter how bad you have it, there's always somebody that's worse. Yeah. Was what really, you know, hit us. Like we're there. There's, you know, families you see, it's just heartbreaking. And it's definitely, like Luke was saying, you just pray and you pray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it's, you have almost no other option in those moments that it feels, you know, literally just like you become helpless and you succumb to, you know, how things play out, and you hope for the best of how things play out, right? Like with your son making it to 9 and stuff, like that is an incredible thing. And, you know, I think it's so, maybe it's not necessarily few and far between, but it's just, there's moments in our life that, you know, it takes pretty much everything to get through that, right? Like even as a father in that instance, right? Or a mother in that instance, right? Like you said, when you were like, that was the end of the world for us, it's like, man, there's definitely been a couple times in my life, and I can, you know, thankfully say that I'm blessed to say that it was only a couple times in my life, right, that I felt that feeling of helplessness, that all I could do is pray and hope, right? And it's like, you know, when you weather that storm and you're on the other side of it, and you know, you're out shed hunting and it's a beautiful day and you're just enjoying the weather and everything, it's like, it's so easy to take those good days for granted and just be like, yeah, that was a beautiful day, yeah, it was a good day. And then, you know, when one of those massive storms hits, it's like, yeah, you just almost realize, man, I took every beautiful day so for granted. Like, I don't know how to put it into words.
Yeah,
in relating to that. Like, yeah,
absolutely. Like my good buddy Brett Kissel says, "Tough times don't laugh; tough people do." Yeah. You kind of live by that. I mean, in those situations, a guy really don't have a choice, mm-hmm. or you just take it front and foremost and. Be there to support everyone around you and mm-hmm. your wife, your kid.
Well, and man, in those times, it's like, it's easy. Like you said, like, you know, when you end up there and someone always has it worse than you, like that was actually something my mom instilled in me my whole life, was that no matter where you are, you know, someone always has it better than you. Someone always has it worse than you. Right.
Absolutely. And that could be outside of hospital life.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And it's almost one of those things to like not compare, but in those moments when it is like that, when it is that bad, it is a very, I don't know if lonely is the right word, but it at times you do feel very alone, where you're like, people don't know what I'm going through. People don't know what our family's going through. People don't know what our kids are going through. You know, it's, people don't get it. But when you bring this to light through like the AHA Foundation, you know, like the Shed Hunters Foundation, it's like, you know, it brings us awareness that, like, no, all of us have this human experience. We, like Luke's story with his sister, and, you know, him and I have talked decently, like extensively within, you know, like he said, with how much he wants to share, right? But it's just like, you know, it's a reminder that, like, man, we are all going through life together. And it's like, it's easy to forget that when you walk down the street, and it's easy to see someone, like a passerby, and be like, this guy doesn't know what I'm going through. But it's a good reminder through your foundation that, like, there are people that are there for you, and there are people that have walked a similar path. And yeah, man, it's a really beautiful thing that you're doing to give back that way. It just blows me away. But
Yeah, well, thank you. Like I said, it's been going great. The last 3 to 4 years, we've helped 4 or 5 families, and we're creeping up to about $45,000 raised.
Unreal.
Back to families. And yeah. I always compare it to, something so simple as picking up rocks. You got 100 rocks on the ground. Do you want to pick up all those rocks yourself? Or would it be a lot easier if 100 people stopped and picked up one rock?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's just it, right? Like, and to be able to be the person that, you know, is cultivating that for people, or, you know, like you said, throughout your team, even though you're leading it to a certain extent, right? It's just... And it's through something you love, right? Like, I think that's really the beauty of it. It's not just like, you know, when you're checking out somewhere, like, oh, can you donate here? Can you donate there? Right? You're tying in something that, you know, is a love for the outdoors, a love for the nature. People love going out shed hunting and doing this. And then you're like, hey, why don't we take something that we all love doing and, you know, create, you know, almost like a friendly competition about it, you know, give some incentive to get out there through the auctions and stuff like that, and the giveaways you guys do and that companies partner with to give stuff away. And then, yeah, to do all that and make something out of it. And then at the end of the day, not only does everybody spend some time in their life enjoying what they're doing, but they know it's going to a phenomenal cause. It's, yeah, it is really hard to move on from this, man. It blows me away.
It's kind of a win-win all around. Like I said, even on my slowest days, where we only find one or two, at the end of the day, we know we're pushing for a cause. So it's still a win. I mean, I can go out and spend 10 hours in the countryside, walk around and not find nothing, and I still come home happy.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's great to get out and have fun, and we get the kids involved. There's categories in there for kids under the age of 12 as well. So we're trying to bring in that generation as well.
Very cool.
And just, it's been drama free, which I am very, very thankful for. Not much going on the page. Everyone knows that there's a lot of kids that watch along and play along. So that's been really good. Can't thank everyone enough for that. But I'm sure, like anything, as numbers climb, we have 2,500 members. Once you get to that 5,000 or 10,000, it's going to be a lot easier to find a apple.
Yeah, that's true. Unfortunately,
but it's going really good.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, when you look at the root cause and the foundation in general, I think it will likely weed out a lot of the bad apples that way, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And everyone's very friendly. Like you said, it's a very friendly competition. Everybody supports everybody. So yeah, hopefully it keeps growing like it has been. And we're here for a while, and we want to help as many families as we can. And hopefully this could eventually close into a formal banquet supper the same way like Wild Sheep Foundation, any of those outdoor banquets are held.
Well, I think you got two new members on the podcast with you here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
And anything we can do to help, you know, you reach that reality too of, like you say, a banquet, man, to do a banquet like that and to, you know, like you say, do a couple auctions and hand out some stuff and then, you know, kind of say, hey, thanks everybody. And, you know, this is what we've raised and whatever. And like, that's a beautiful thing, man. And I think a banquet would be, that's an awesome thing to strive towards, you know, to create something like that.
Yeah. We'll kind of bring, you know, the both worlds together because of the shed hunting itself. I know there's a lot of passionate people throughout Canada, down into the States, just shed fanatics in itself. But when you take something so big as that, and then you bring a foundation together, and they know that we're standing and helping families, I think it could be a very big hit.
Yeah, I think I've seen, is it Eric Chesser? He donated a prize last year, is that right?
Yes, Eric Chesser with Hush and... Yeah. So some of these bigger names, Steve Eklund, I talked to Steve quite a bit, Cody Robbins,
Wow.
Who else? Amanda. So a lot of these bigger names that's in the hunting world are seeing this as well, and they're all coming together. And our support is, like you said, trickling down into the States. I'm not quite sought up yet to go that far in regards to, I guess, the money issues with PayPal and all that. I haven't really got there yet. But as time goes on and we grow, it's definitely something we'll be looking into.
Well, that's the thing. You could be the biggest name in the hunting industry, but doing it, we're all human. And I'm sure your message with this foundation is going to resonate with literally everybody. So, I mean, I don't know, my hat's off to you, man. That's huge. And to be honest, moving on to a hunting story or something just sounds pointless at this point.
not to say you don't got some great hunting stories, but like, man.
It's an awful heavy start to this one, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
what I care about is already over.
Yeah. Yeah, this one we can just talk about forever.
We'll just start another podcast, and we'll wrap this one up now, and we'll just start another podcast for the hunting stories.
Like Luke said, couldn't say it better. Like, hats off to you, man. And honestly, anything this just lights the fire under my own ass.
We'll talk after this this podcast for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, appreciate it, guys.
But I guess, you know, to get to know the man a little bit more who spearheads this, you know, so Huntley Shepherd, you know, going a little bit back into it, we've definitely wanted to jump into, you know, your lineage, your upbringing, everything like that. Something we really like to get into, especially before getting into all these stories and stuff, like what kind of fuels that motivation. Before even going too far back, still keeping it in the shed hunting realm, what drove you in general, like what drives you to be very passionate about shed hunting aside from the foundation, like before the foundation was a thing? What, you know, was it patterning animals? Was it just an excuse to get outside? Like what kind of stirred up the love for shed hunting for yourself?
It probably started at a young age, being from Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
We hike and hunt caribou all the time, and you would find these, you know, caribou sheds everywhere. And I kind of got a liking to it there, but in Newfoundland, you need permits and everything else, so it's not a very big thing. But soon when I moved out here back in, I guess I graduated in 2006, I had one buddy that kind of did it on and off. And so I just tagged along for one day, and I was like, that's kind of pointless. He's like, it's like, what? I'm like, I don't know, it's kind of pointless. I just wasted a full day. And I come out with, I think, is a G1 or a G2. Like, it's broke off. I don't know. I don't get much excitement out of this. But then I tried the second year, and I found two or three sheds. And I'm like, God, this is still kind of crazy that I put this much time into hiking the countryside and not really getting much for rewards other than blisters on my feet. And then the third year, I started back shedding again. And right out of the gate, I found a shed that was a buck I was hunting at the time. I called Frequent Flyer. And it was a mainframe 5-point, but he had a, I want to say it was 11-inch flyer. The minute I found that antler, addiction started that I could not control. And it just snowballed and snowballed and snowballed.
That's funny.
And I went from two quarter sections of land to 10 sections to traveling all over Alberta.
That's too cool. I feel like I'm in the lineage, or like in the timeline of just starting to go from, man, this is pointless, to enjoying it more.
It gets better. It gets better. Luke, you're going to have to go out with them and just stage a few antlers ahead of them.
That's my plan for my daughters. A couple drop pins on Google Maps. Let her find them. Be like, whoa, look, you found them.
It worked with all my kids. That's all you need, just a little bit.
just an Easter egg hunt to yeah. for victory. I'm going to do the same for Aaron at bear camp here coming up.
Yeah.
in his blind, be like, whoa, look at this giant mule deer. Wow, where did that come from?
Just kick it right in front of me. Like, you don't see it yet? You don't see it? Hold my hand. Just do it with your daughter. Didn't think you'd have to, yeah, do it for a grown-ass man. But... That's funny.
But yeah, so it kind of just started there, and then it just went further and further as I got into knowing all these deer, targeting deer. It more or less turned into a challenge. So I'd have 8 or 10 deer that I wanted and had to find sheds from.
Yeah.
But the whole time you're shed hunting, I'm a strong believer that every time you step foot in that bush, for one, it does the guy really good mentally. Mm-hmm. It's a natural medicine. It's my one time I can just shut the world off and just think about what I'm actually doing for once and not have a bunch of interference going on with the crazy world we're living in right now. Hmm. So, that's a major part of it. And then you're always up in your, I guess your skill, your knowledge with all the animals. If you get into where they're living,
mm-hmm.
you can yeah. find pinch points. You can find trails that you're not going to find if you're just hunting. Unless you're a boots on the ground kind of guy and you spend, you know, daylight to dark hunting every day, you'll stumble upon a lot. But in these, in my neck of the woods, there's a lot of road hunters, truck hunters. You know, a lot of guys just sit in one spot and watch. So you learn to lay out a land quite fast when you actually get your boots on the ground and find those deer trails. I know it benefit me, for example, into my elk. You learn those paths, those travels they you use over and over, pinch points, watering holes. You find all that stuff when you're out shed hunting.
All the escape routes and stuff, eh?
Oh, yeah, because every time you think you're smart, as those, they're 2 times smarter.
And 3 times as fast.
Yeah, especially in Newfie. Yeah, he's like faster it. Than a newbie, that's for sure.
I like how you put that though too, like, you know, to get away from the interference and stuff like that and how much that helps. I think that's something a lot of people resonate with any time of enjoying the outdoors for sure. But going into even, you know, the talk of the newfies this last episode and this episode, I feel like I'm surrounded by all the buys now.
Gonna be one of the buys before you know it.
Yeah, Luke's just bringing the whole East Coast over here. Now. Ever since he started co-hosting, there's been a theme here. But
scrutiny, but, they call it.
Yeah. So, but how old were you again when you moved here, Huntley? Like, what was that like going from, like you said, you were doing some outdoor stuff out on the East Coast and then, you know, move into Alberta? And what was all that transition like for you?
Oh, it was I guess right at the beginning, getting the layout of the land, the understanding of almost everything is owned by somebody. In Newfoundland, it's a lot of crown land. It's come and go as you please, other than like privately owned cottages, cabins, kind of thing like that. We can kind of hunt wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out here, that was probably my biggest challenge, just getting started. I knew the rules and regulations, but doing that leap, I guess, of actually knocking on doors, it was kind of tough at first. I mean, you just roll up to somebody's house and knock on the door and be like, hey, I'm from Newfoundland. Can I hunt? No. Okay. can I hunt? Sorry, I have, you know, 6 or 7 other people. And then you would run into the odd person that'd be like, actually, yeah, go ahead. And you're nice enough. You come and knock on a door. I asked you to use this quarter and because other people's hunting here and there. The whole hunting started very young. I was kind of born into it with my family. On my dad's side, all of us are big hunters. All of them are big hunters. We actually grew up pretty much at a lodge. My dad, my brother, my uncles were all guides. So I don't really think I had a whole lot of choice to do anything else. The moral of the story is, I mean, I was home skins at a shacks when I was 6, 7, 8 years old.
That's too cool.
So you kind of get born into it, and my dad would take me out at an early age, and I was probably, 4 or 5 years old when I'd start going around with my dad, and I just pretty much grew a liking for it right away, and it turned into the fanatic I am today, I guess.
Being so close to the west coast of Newfoundland, you guys hunt that the Long Range Mountains, or you stick pretty close to Springdale, or?
So we would go up around, we'd hunt a lot up in Taylor's Brook area. So area, and then we hunt, area 14 and area 51, I believe it was, Chappelle Lake, Bayvert Peninsula.
Yeah.
Nice. We hunt Taylor's Brook quite a bit, area 4. And, we've had some pretty good hunts there, shot some pretty big moose. So I guess the biggest one I've seen out of Newfoundland was 6 to 3 inches.
Yeah, it's a
Which is very rare.
Yeah, it's a big moose.
And then, I moved over here, and I had a passion for hunting already, and I already had, I guess, goals and challenges made I wanted to achieve once I got here. And it just snowballed.
What age did you get here? Did I miss that?
I would have been, I graduated in 2006, so I would have showed up, would have been about 18 years old when I moved here.
So was it the mule deer, the whitetail? What got you fired up out here?
Truth be told, I'm an elk fanatic.
Elk, yeah, fair.
Yeah, right from early ages, I would watch that at home, and I always say one day I'm gonna have one of those.
And look at you now.
Now it's my now it's literally my passion. I can hunt elk every day. I wish it was September for 11 months of the year.
Just one little break, hey?
Yeah, just one little break.
That's funny.
But, give some time to elk to breathe.
Yeah, and me. And mostly me. They're doing quite well.
That's funny. Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, so, I mean, man, that kind of starts to lead right into, you know, I mean, we were going to talk a little bit into, you know, what spurred that love for you. But like you said, you kind of get born right into it. And with all this elk stuff, I know we wanted to touch on like a few stories, because, man, you've been, getting into some crazy stuff since, I guess, from Alberta, or from getting to Alberta till now, and it sounds like your whole life. But did you want to start even with touching in on the elk you took in 2023 in this past season?
Yeah, so I guess right away I drew my notorious, this famous elk tag that took me 11 years to draw.
Wow.
So I had my standards set pretty high. I've had some pretty big bulls in the area. So I started out in archery season trying to target these main herd bulls. And my kid tagged along, 8 years old. He's there every step of the way. Every elk I've called in or had in my sights this year, he was there. And quite honestly, he called in, would have been a total of 12 bulls himself at 8 years old this year.
Wow, that's impressive.
So he knows his chirps, he knows his cow. Yeah, he knows his cow chirps, bugles, chuckles. But the crazy thing about it is he's 8, and he doesn't use nothing, only pretty much just a bat. He don't use no mouth reads, he don't use no calls, and it's just all vocal for him.
What? That's crazy.
100% vocal. So he's turning into my wingman pretty fast.
That's a pretty cool wingman.
I'm dreading for 14 to come, because I kind of like for him to stay at those high pitches.
I didn't want to be the one to say it. I was thinking,
It's going to come to an end.
It's going to come to an end right away. And then he'll probably be good at calling moose.
Yeah.
So we chased these elk all over all September, October. And truth be told, we had some pretty phenomenal bulls. probably some even bigger than the one I actually end up shooting in rifle. But because I had that rifle tag, I was holding out. We're 11 life. We're covered in bulls every day almost.
That's so a dream.
Fast forward to, I guess, would be November after passing up, I don't know, 30 bulls all archery season. We got into November, and the first 4 or 5 days, these elk just scattered over the countryside. Soon when general season opened for whitetail, and a couple bulls were shot out of it, and some cows, and made it tough. Those big bulls pretty much fell off the edge of the earth for a bit. Did what they do best because they're big. And it took us a while to catch up to them. So I was actually pretty fortunate enough to end up relocating them again later on in November. And I had some of the guys hanging out with me from Stomping Ground. And we got in on the elk. And I guess we call it bull fever gets the best of us. And my first opportunity, I pretty much pulled my shot. And I just grazed him. And we looked for blood and everything, reviewed footage, and it's all on film. And don't know how it happened, but like I said, buck fever gets the best of us. And he was at 100 yards. I was locked in and solid on a set of shooting sticks, and just didn't work out. So I kept pushing and pushing, and we looked for that elk for another week or so, and end up relocating that same elk not even quarter of a mile from where I initially had to run in with him. And my wife was with me at the time, and all of our stars lined up. And we were fortunate enough to tag them. And when we were cleaning them, I found my initial shot and it literally just grazed his neck. Wow. So at least we got him out of the way. And I didn't have to worry about the unknowns on where the shot placement exactly was from the first shot.
Yeah. Man, and it is an absolutely like beautiful bull elk. What was it, like a 6x7 or 7? I'm trying to from the pictures, if I remember.
Yeah, it would have been a 6x7 with a little, I guess you would call it a cheater point, but pretty much a mainframe 6x6. And that was my goal. I've been pretty fortunate enough, and I've tagged a few elk just in archery alone. The ones I do have are 5x5s, and I want a 6x6 was what I was pushing for, and I got them.
Man. Were you using that that nice thumb hole stock X-Bolt you got there, that 270 Wisdom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my pride and joy.
That thing's nice.
Yeah, that Browning Eclipse 270 WSM is quite the caliber.
Nice.
So what was it like walking up to it? Were you just stoked?
Oh, it was, it's almost as if time stopped for a minute. It took me forever to get to him. And being my biggest boy shot as I was just walking up to him, for once, there wasn't much ground shrinkage.
For once.
Yeah. For once, there wasn't much ground shrinkage, and he actually got a little bigger than I thought. And when I finally put my hands on him after watching him, and I had lots of trail cam pictures and knew this bull pretty well. And the fact that, like I said, I did take a shot at the same bull a week prior, it was some mixed emotions for sure. You work so hard on something like that, and then it's over. It's kind of sad it's over.
Getting that monkey off your back, knowing that, you know, it wasn't a lethal shot. It wasn't like in the guts or, you know, on the leg or something. You don't have a compromised elk on the landscape anymore. Just to close the chapter on that guy must have felt real good too.
Oh, absolutely. So when we started to cape him out, and I said right from the start, it looked like I grazed the neck. And some other guy said, oh, it kind of looked like he just brushed hair right on that bottom of his neck, but it was literally right at his fore shoulder. But when I started caping him, yeah, sure enough, it was about an inch up in just that neck meat where I hit him. It was a clean pass through. It didn't really do anything. There was one little drop of blood that was half the size of a pea is all we found on the ground.
Yeah, so you knew it wasn't lethal.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, when I see blood, I always think for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But we put a pretty fair effort that day. I had 1, 2, 3, 4. There was 7 of us looking. Nice. And we spent pretty much right from, I would have shot right around 9:30 in the morning. And we burnt the whole day looking. Mm-hmm. And we came back first thing in the morning to that area. And you know, the famous, hey, just show up and maybe you can see some magpies. Or we looked and we did some more hiking. And he was nowhere to be seen.
But, you know, to even, like Luke said, to go through all that and fold the tag, but even to backtrack and think like an 11-year wait, you know, some of these infamous waits on tags, like you say, it's, you're like, wow, it's over, right? And you're a little bit sad, but it's like, man, that's a heck of a lot of persistence to get to that point and to follow up on something like that and to get to the very end of it. Like, yeah. To reiterate, must have felt pretty damn good.
It was, like I said, the best way to explain it, I guess, would be mixed emotions.
Yeah.
The only thing I wish I could have changed was wish my little boy was with me.
Yeah.
He was there every step of the way, and the only day he wasn't there is the day I got him.
Dang.
He wasn't there for the initial miss, but.
Yeah.
He spent, would have been winter break in November. It's kind of convenient that it works out that when I take my holidays, I kind of plan him so he's off school as well. So he spent every day of his break in the countryside.
Man, that's too cool.
Yeah.
So moving forward from that a little bit, you know, not too many months later, take us on the path of how this boar came to be, because from what it seemed like, it wasn't something you were actively targeting at the time.
No, absolutely not. If I was going to shoot a pig over 300 pound, I definitely wouldn't have took a 223. It was probably the last
caliber. Predator control to bacon patrol, right?
It was, a crazy experience, and my 8-year-old was there. So nice. That was kind of cool. Like I knew this pig was fairly known, but there was a few people that knew of him, and some of us knew of him enough that he nicknamed him Pork Chop. And he's been around, we can confirm for sure, at least 7 years. Because we have them on trail camera back that far.
Wow.
And I always get asked, well, how do you know that was the same pig on your trail camera for 7 years? Because this pig was quite easy identified because he only have one ear. So one ear is missing. And we pretty much watched him year after year after year, but 100% of pictures was under the cover of darkness.
Wow.
Not one daytime picture. We've only ran into him probably 2 or 3 times in person amongst 8 or 10 people in daylight hours.
Wow.
So he was there, but he wasn't really there. We've tried finding him before and with no luck. So over Christmas, I guess, Christmas break, we would have been coyote hunting quite a bit. Me and my boy, and we racked up, I don't know, 50, 60 coyotes in 10 days.
Holy cow.
So it was just another day of calling. And we got set up. the last thing I was thinking about was a pig, that's for sure. So I had some tips. There was a bunch of coyotes hanging out. So we got into place and we're just getting ready to get set up. And I told him, I'm like, I just seen something, buddy. And he's like, what? I'm like, I just seen something. He's like, that's going to be a coyote, Dad. I said, I don't know. Just hold on. Just let me kind of peek through these willows a bit. Then I can hear some movement. And the first noise I heard, I honestly thought that almost sounded like a bear. It was kind of a growl. I'm like, that's not a coyote. I'm like, what is that? And then before I can even think about anything, I see this thing coming through the trees. And when it broke out, it was about 25 yards away, 30 at most.
Jesus.
And it's coming straight at me. And
coming into the predator call?
No, we didn't even have a chance to call. We're still just getting set up. So I haven't even made a sound. So he must have seen us or seen me. And instant charged. And luck should have it that we were coyote hunting. So when I said I seen a coyote, I loaded up. And I was getting ready for this coyote when he broke out. Yeah, it was a pig and he was at 30 yards and charging.
Oh.
So the first shot would have been around 20 yards by the time everything registered what was going on. 20 yards to 14 yards to 8 yards. And he kind of just buzzed right by me. Buzzed right terrifying. By me. The third shot kind of stumbled him pretty good. And kind of put him off course. And I don't know if just with the echo hitting the trees that he was still coming straight at me or confused or because I don't really know if he's seen me or not. I don't know. For my own sake, I hope he didn't because that's kind of scary when you think about it.
Just to clarify, sorry to interrupt. Like, I know this isn't a recorded video podcast, but my jaw is like dropped. I'm like, holy shit! Yeah. So, just to clarify, so like this is a bolt action rifle you're using. I'm just basically assuming at this time.
Yeah, it was just a Mossberg MVP 223.
And so,
from that's all I had.
From the like 25, 30 yard mark to 8 yard, you got how many shots off? Like you got two or three in the
three shots.
Three like, shots. Like hip firing? 30. Like
no, that was aim as best you could because at that distance and 300 pounds and he was 5'6" from nose to tail.
Holy cow.
You can pretty much look down the barrel.
Yeah.
So it was literally shoulder, pull the trigger, rack a shell, pull the trigger, rack a shell.
That's a damn linebacker coming at you.
Yeah, dude, that is like...
And I was like, oh. So he kind of buzzed by me, and I spun, and the last shot, the furthest shot, was when he was running away, and it was at about 37 yards. And he kind of hit the bush, and I was just like, oh my God, I didn't even know. So I'm looking at... I go to where my kid's at, and I'm like, holy buddy. I said, this is kind of crazy. I said, I just shot a hog. He's like, really? Really? Is it, like, can we go get him? I'm like, no, we're going to go back to the truck, and I need you to stay in the truck. Well, he's kind of getting disappointed because the whole part of hunting is going to looking for it. I'm like, yeah, but you should probably stay in the truck for this. So I put him in the truck and I go into the bush and this thing charges me again. So I put one more round at him and he turns around and runs the other way. And then I guess the landowner at the time was coming through and he kind of hollers at me. He's like, he's gone across the wide open. He's over another side. I'm like, does he even know what I'm hunting right now? I'm like, what was it? He's like, it was like a humongous pig. I was like, okay, we're talking about the same thing. So, he kind of talked to me from a distance and told me roughly where he thought he had went in, because I was in pretty thick bush. And when I got up there, sure enough, he was there, and that thing got up and charged one more time, and that's pretty much where it expired.
They eat up lead like elk, eh?
Oh, it was on the reel. It was, I believe, from start to finish, there was 7 rounds fired total.
Oh, my goodness.
And charged now, like 3 times.
Just, I'm at a loss for words again here. do you now carry this or something when you go shed hunting? Like, is this now a concern in your head? Like, holy cow, if I'm out here with my kids, like, you know, you don't want your kid to get ran over by a 300-pound animal.
Well, truth be told, since that old ordeal and the what ifs and would ifs and could ifs, we definitely when we shed hunt now, we're prepared.
You got 12 gauge or something? Like, what do you?
Yeah, so I carry a little Defender now, and hopefully that'll stop them probably a little bit quicker than a 223, but.
Yeah, better than a sharp stick, as they say.
Or a 4-inch little pocket knife.
Yeah, is that in the Lloyd area that this all went down?
Yeah, so it's pretty. It was in this area, towards Vermilion.
Holy crap! So it could, you know, in the prairies, you know, when I go shed hunting, I'm not usually too concerned about, you know, spooking off a coyote or something, or, you know, predators in general, or. I don't even know if these things aren't considered predators, are they? I don't know what they are. Well, scary. No,
excuse me. Well, no, like all the videos you watch, these Russian boars tend to be really aggressive. To me personally, I think what I experienced was worse than any bear I've seen. Even the one that charged me out of a tree stand that I literally shot at point blank and fell in my tree stand. That's probably one of the craziest experiences I've ever seen was that pig.
You know, it just doesn't cross my mind when I'm out, you know, out shed hunting or out in the East Country, you know, in the prairie.
Well, no, like, and that was, like I said, that was the last thing that crossed our mind that day. And
do you think he would have buggered off if you didn't have the gun, or do you think he would have just kept charging you?
It's kind of hard to say. To anybody, it was a flat on charge for sure, but was it just as, you know, travel route he was going to take to begin with? Is that the trail he always used, or was it just a coincidence that I was exactly where he broke out? But I know, I just don't know the ending if there was no weapon, I guess, involved of any sort. It's kind of hard. And with my kid there and everything else, I guess, thank God that it went the way it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a big animal, 300 pounds.
Yeah. So pretty funny part of the story. Once I knew it was expired, I go back, and my truck's fairly close. So I told a boy, I said, once I'm in the bush, I said, if you hear me scream, I said, I got him, then you can get out. So he see me, and I'm walking towards the truck, and I told him, thumbs up, and screamed, got him. So he comes down, and he's coming down, and he's happy. And he's already seen, like I said, 50, 60 coyotes in 10 days. So he's just walking up, and this pig's kind of fell right in the bottom of this little creek runoff, and he's looking at him. He's like, "Oh, that's a dark coyote." he's running over towards him, and by this time, I still haven't even put my hands on him personally, but I just knew he was expired. So he starts running towards him. I'm like, "You better be careful, kid." I said, "It's not no coyote," and he's like, "Yeah, it is. It's a coyote." I'm like, "Nobody, it's a hog." He's like, "Yeah, like a big coyote." I'm like, "No, it's a hog." Good. And he's like, "Like, really? Like, you just like a wild pig?" I'm like, "Yeah." So then he was like on cloud 9. First thing, we had to call a taxidermist. And he's like, "We're going to be getting this done, Dad. this is like, this is legendary.
Heck yeah.
So I called a taxidermist right away on his request. Hey, we just shot a wild pig. No way. He's like, I definitely want to do it. I definitely want that pig. I'm like, well, she's yours. Hang up the phone. He's like, did he say he wanted to keep our pig? I'm like, no, he said he wants to do it. Like, oh, he's like, I thought he said he was going to keep it, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah. How does he taste on the smoker?
Actually, he's been very good. I've handed some out to some friends, and I don't know, he's probably almost half gone already.
Unreal. What an insane story. So, man, I got two quick questions that came up from that. One is, with the taxidermy side of things, what are you doing for like a form or for the mount?
We're going to go ahead and do I believe it's a 3D shoulder. 3D shoulder mount.
I'm going to like, so what's that look like? I don't know. I'm just very naive to 3D shoulder. So that's like hovering off the wall a bit?
Yeah, so it'll be off the wall and you'll get to see like that back, I guess, felt or whatnot on the,
yeah, okay,
the back,
yeah,
end. And is that one shoulder is very defined.
Kind of like a, do they sometimes call it like a pedestal wall mount?
Yeah, like a pedestal. There's a lot of 3D forms done on pedestals.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be, that's super so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, like we were going to do a full body, but at the same time, I got a 7'4", I believe it is, 7'3", 7'4", black bear coming back full body. And then, dang, I have that elk coming back full body.
Oh,
no, sorry, yeah, shoulder. And then I have,
okay, okay, that would have been insane.
No. I was like, I want to see that.
Getting carried away because I have like 9 mounts all over the place.
You're going to run out of square footage here.
Yeah,
you're gonna have it.
Yeah, I got that elk coming back shoulder mount. I got a full body bear. I got a head of the one that charged me into tree stand coming back. We're kind of, wow, turning that one into a mini rug just for a storyteller.
Wow.
And then I got a 3/4 bear in New Brunswick that I shot last year when I went there with SG Adventures. And I have, what else is coming back? A coyote coming back. And then I'm off to Africa in September. So there might be some stuff coming back there.
Yeah, no doubt. Dang, dude. Holy smokes.
And I guess another whitetail coming back.
Man,
she's running out of the room fast.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And I'm just, everything you mentioned, I'm like, that's another incredible story. Like, you know, just briefly mentioning this bear story of getting charged in a tree stand and it falling in your lap, and you're like, okay, like, you know. And in contrast to like kind of both of those stories, or maybe contrast is the wrong word, but you know, when you're talking about, you know, being charged by that boar and it being crazier than like the bear encounter, the bear instance, that was kind of the other question that popped into my mind, was just like, you know, as crazy of an encounter as it was, you know, did it, and kind of similar to what Luke was saying with like, you know, carrying a, you know, a firearm with you now, or just kind of being more head on a swivel, like, did that lead to like that night, like a little bit of a sleepless night picturing this thing kind of charging at you? Like, was it a little difficult to get over that hump of, yeah, kind of how crazy that was, or did it not faze you too much?
Oh, well, it did definitely leave us shaking a bit. I keep replying it with, yeah, I guess my kid, my kid's my biggest concern, and he always is. Every time he's in the countryside, he's always my biggest concern. Mm-hmm. So that part of it, overplayed over and over and over, like the, yeah, what ifs, and
what it, yeah,
for that. And yeah, so for the first day or two, I was still kind of shaky, but at that time he's already been butchered and in my freezer, so I think I won.
yeah, you just think about it while you're eating it, and you're like, yeah.
yeah, I chew them with a little more aggression, that's for sure.
you said that the bear kind of whizzed by yourself. Like, where was your kid standing in relation to yourself and the boar when he initially rushed you guys?
He would have been a little farther to the west of me, because when I seen this coyote, he kind of just or what I thought was a coyote, he was kind of in this little draw under some willows and stuff. So I took off ahead, and he was still back pretty much I would say about 100 yards from the truck. So I kind of led down, and when we're almost to where we're going to set up is where I seen it. And thank God he was still back by the truck.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I just kind of told him in between two minds, like, hey, buddy, just be careful. Hold on. And I took off. Because sometimes when you try to catch those coyotes, they can be a little tricky as well.
Hmm. Boy. I'm shaking up just hearing the story. I'm
yeah. Like, yeah. It was pretty crazy. Yeah. So I ended up calling a farmer and he come out. I'm like, hey, I'm going to need your tractor to load a pig. So yeah.
Is it true there's not much bacon that comes off those guys?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot. We did a lot of roast and steak and then like stew meat style.
Mm-hmm.
Just for pulled pork. And
nice.
Boy,
yeah, but either way, it's a lot of bacon nice. For a little cost.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So whatever we get from it was definitely a win.
Mm-hmm.
What a story.
Man, yeah, that's just when I thought that the beginning couldn't be topped. It's like, man, all of these, yeah, everything, Huntley, I'm just like, you're leaving us speechless this whole time. I'm just like, holy shit.
Jaw droppers.
Yeah.
But
what else you got up your sleeve? Let's hear it.
Well, to jump right in, you know, maybe I'll interject and just say, you know, before we, you know, when we were talking earlier, you were like, oh, you know, the heck of a year you had, because we were kind of BSing a bit about most memorable moments. And I mean, these are some pretty incredibly memorable moments. But you mentioned this year that you had with, you know, Ghost, this giant white-tailed buck, and, you know, this year of a bear, a bull, moose, like all this stuff that went down. Do you want to touch on that a little bit too?
Yeah, so that would have been the first year I had, I guess, the privilege to be a part of Just Relentless. I went into the business, I guess, not really knowing what I was doing. All I knew that I loved hunting, and I did indeed want to be a part of a show at one day. Mm-hmm. So I was very thankful I got asked to be a part of Just Relentless with Caleb and Kaylin. And I believe mostly it started because I was so into elk that that's kind of how it all trickled. And they're both on my Facebook and Instagram, and they followed quite a bit. So they seen what I was really into. And so when they asked, I gladly accepted their offer. And it turned out the first year of the show and the first year of me hunting solo, I guess, running camera by myself and everything else, was probably my best year to date in the hunting world. I closed a chapter on Ghost, which was a long time in the making. He disappeared and didn't know where he went. And I don't know if it was just a blessing. He just showed up. I believe it was, if I can remember, it would have been like really early, like 4th or 5th of November. This is when he showed up, and I couldn't believe it. But at the first encounter, I already had my camera put away. It was a slow day, didn't see anything. I was like, well, whatever, it's 20 minutes left in a day. I better pack up and start leaving because it's only early in November. Lots of time. When I get everything put away in my backpack, I look out the window of my blind and I can just see this deer coming. And I'm like, huh, See, when I put the binos up, I know exactly who it is, and it was my first year, so actually the big hardest decision I ever made was letting that deer walk the first time I seen him, because the camera was already put away. So I called him and let him know, and he said, oh, man, I don't know, that's some willpower. I'm like, well, if we're running the show, I need to have it on film. Or like, he's like, yeah, but a deer like that, dude, we can't let him walk. I'm like, well, but all my stars lined up, and, yeah, I did end up tagging him. And a couple of days later, and I ended up shooting a big bear that spring with Just Relentless. Oh, yeah, that was a 7'4" bear, over 22-inch skull. And then I took my first Alberta moose as well.
Man.
And that moose was 40 inches.
Holy cow. And that was all through that, like through the Just Relentless show too?
Yeah, so all those episodes were aired on Just Relentless. I believe they're still on their YouTube channel as well.
Man.
So yeah, it was a great time. Had a lot of fun with the boys and learning curve, and kind of got my feet wet into that industry a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of bent all over.
That is way too cool. So I know you mentioned, you know, Africa is kind of on the list here coming up. I'm like, how are you going to start topping some of the stuff that you've shared with us already? And, you know, everything you're a part of through the AHA Shed Hunters Foundation and everything. But, what's this spring, summer, fall looking like for yourself? Like, what's high ticket on your bucket list right now, or goals right now for you?
Oh, well, this dream of mine is slowly becoming a reality, I guess. And I've always wanted to shoot a gemsbok in Africa, and I will get a chance to pursue one of those when I'm there.
Wow.
So that's pretty big on the list.
That's this year too?
September. We'll be flying out on the 23rd of September. So there'll probably be 5 or 6 animals I'll be going after in Africa in September. I guess the season starts off with bear here right away. Then I'll be doing a fishing trip up in Tobin Lake in June. And then my parents will be showing up in July. It'll be the first time I have both my mom and dad and my family together in 8 years.
Nice.
So that is probably just as important as any of my hunts I'm going to take part in this year.
Nice.
And then we're off to, I guess, would be, we might be doing moose camp this year up north. And then I might end up drawing my moose tag again here. So we'll see. Depends on that moose tag.
Is there any red tape around bringing taxidermy back from Africa that you're aware of?
Oh, no. Like, I'll be going with SG Adventures. So they already did a trip. I know once they get there to hunt, you get your animals, you come on back to Canada, and then the resort or the lodge or through will be going with GTA. From my understandings, all that's dealt with, and our capes and stuff will show up, I guess, a month or so after we get back.
Awesome.
Well, that is, and just the species in Africa, like you say, that you can get the chance to target, it's just remarkable. For sure.
Yeah, so that's been one of my main animals in Africa is a gemsbok. Just the distinctive colors, their look, their just everything about them is something that I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of really looking forward to it. And I guess as silly or as funny as it sounds, I'm kind of excited for a duiker as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's best of both worlds, I guess. It's like a little jackrabbit on steroids all the way up to a gemsbok.
Yeah, like literally almost like a doe. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, as crazy as it sounds, yeah, I'm pretty excited about the duiker. But I think we're in for a pretty busy season. Lots mm-hmm. on the and yeah, I get some new people out there, some kids. My boys look forward to hunting season just as much as I do, if not more.
Nice, man.
So you're building an addition for a trophy room, or
yeah?
Sounds like you're gonna have no. need some big space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think eventually it's just gonna be like everyone's gonna sleep on the floor. Really, we're just gonna start getting rid of beds here in a couple of years.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
you got a new trailer? Yeah, no, that's not for camping. That's just trophy storage. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing you want to check out, but come on in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Man, Huttley, I can't, you know, thank you enough, you know, for both of us for coming on and sharing all this stuff. You know, everything that you do through the AHA Shed Hunters Foundation there, and everything you've been a part of, all the stories you're sharing and everything. You're just such a down to earth guy, but you know, you've been a part of some seriously once in a lifetime moments, and some really incredible times, and you know, some really tough times and some really much deserved ones by the sounds of it as well, of success and stuff like that too. And yeah, the things you've shared with us throughout this episode and this time talking, man, it blew my mind. Some of my favorite stuff about, you know, when we get into podcasts and sitting down with someone is, you know, you can only get to know someone so much through pictures and, you know, descriptions on social media and everything. And then to just listen to you share your view and your outlook and everything that you do and everything that you share, man, you deserve really all the best with everything that you aim to achieve. Like, it's really incredible. I'm in it again, still right back at it, at a loss for words again. But just everything that you've gone through, it's blown my mind, honestly. I'm just like,
yeah, I echo all those thoughts, man. It's just, it's phenomenal to actually get to talk to you. And, you know, I've been following you for a while, and, you know, I knew you took some great animals, but golly, you got some stories.
Yeah. It's like
that's just three in the last year.
What the heck?
But yeah, she's been a busy busy season, I guess, career, all kinds of crazy stories, lots of stories.
Yeah,
good and bad. I mean, the big ones do get away, so
yeah. Well,
but yeah, I know, I really appreciate all the kind words, guys. It's definitely been a blast chatting and getting to know you guys as well.
Oh man, we'd absolutely, you know, love to have you back on in the future to talk more about the foundation. If you want to share any more stories, you know, with what happens in Africa, we'll both, Luke and myself, will be keeping an eye out for what happens to you out in Africa and everything there and what you get up to. And just to reiterate again, you know, the best way to find you and the stuff that you do would be through the AHA Shed Hunters Foundation. So that, well, so it's Facebook is the AHA Shed Hunters Foundation, where you can go check out everything that's going on, donate, get involved, be a part of it. And then you're also on Instagram, right? As AHA_Shed Hunters.
Yes, that's correct. And our main, I guess, platform would be Facebook. And we still share all the pictures and families and lots on Instagram, but our main platform is definitely Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so for everyone listening, definitely get involved, check it out. And thank you again, man. We'll definitely be talking to you a lot more about ways that we can go out and help any way that we can. And we encourage everybody to do the same. It's incredible stuff you guys are doing, man. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, guys, once again, thanks for having me on the podcast. It was my first, and I'll happily, I guess, jump back on another one and discuss things on a little later and some more stories. I mean, it can only get, hopefully, no worse than what I've already seen. It's definitely lots to talk about, lots to talk about.
Absolutely. It's all up from here for sure, man. But keep us updated. We'll keep an eye out. And thank you tons, man. I hope you have a great night over there and appreciate it a lot.
Awesome, guys. Same with you guys. And Luke, all the best to your sister and the baby. Hopefully everything goes well there. And thanks again, guys.
appreciate that a lot. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay, take care. See ya.